I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations. Today, I'm excited to have a couple of my favorites on the podcast. Mike Murphy, my husband, some of you know him from conversations we've had here. Some of you follow him on Facebook. Mike, welcome back to Faith Conversations.
Thank you for inviting me back.
And my other favorite, John Lustria, my son, who works at the National Museum of Civil War Medicine in Frederick, Maryland. He's married to the lovely Sarah, and they live in Charlestown, West Virginia. Welcome back, John.
Yes, and you forgot to mention that I'm your co-host.
Oh, yes, that's right. I upgraded you to co-host.
That's right.
What, so Mike's the guest and you're the co-host today? Is that what it is?
I guess so, but I'm never going to let you go back on telling me I'm co-host.
Okay, yes. John's forever co-host.
John, I wonder which one of us is our most favorite.
That's an awfully good question.
Would you answer that question, Anita?
Oh, you guys are hilarious. They're tapping into one of my one of those issues that can debilitate me, pull me apart. They're being funny. Never you mind. All right. Well, we have a good topic for you today. One of the things I did want to say, though, I introduced John and told where he worked. Mike is working, actually, not only as a spiritual director, but also part-time at our church, crafting a college ministry for the church right now and enjoying...
I'm flailing around right now. Yes. I'm in that part of ministry, just flailing around with it.
I love it. Yeah, which is what it is when you launch anything, start something up. So it's kind of fun to be, at least for me, to be on the sidelines watching that. And as usual... I'm doing spiritual direction. I mentioned spiritual direction on the podcast, just that it's a wonderful thing, but I don't often say anything about me doing it. I do have openings for clients. I never mention that on the podcast, but in case anyone wondered. And we've got a couple of emails, and I want to read those. John, the co-host and listener advocate, always
That's
telling
right.
me to share listener emails. So one of them... is an email that relates to the book club. Some of you may know that we launched a book club. Lori Neff helped with that. We've read and discussed one book, and we're tweaking it. John has given some critique, and you know, Lori and I didn't feel like it was exactly where we wanted it to be, but first time, we're pretty happy. So I heard from Sharon, who said, "Hi, Anita, I loved this book. I know I never would have chosen this book on my own. The themes..."
What book was it?
Oh, thank you, John. The book was When Mockingbirds Sing by Billy Coffey. That's great to mention it because people can still read it and then go back and listen to the podcast discussing it. Thank you. Yeah, When Mockingbirds Sing by Billy Coffey. So Sharon said, "I never would have chosen this. The themes were themes I needed to heal in my life. So meaningful and powerful thoughts. I read this book with a friend, too. And as of the writing of this email, they were still yet to meet and discuss the book." And I love that, the thought of people getting together. I also had someone else contact me and say that she and her daughter read the book and were looking forward to listening to the discussion on the podcast. And, oh, that's great stuff. So, yeah.
It is great stuff. And let us know if you discussed this amongst yourself. Let us know if you had good discussions, some things that Mom and Lori missed. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, well, and talk about what we missed. Sharon went on to say, because I missed something in the book, she said, "I too missed the abuse reporting in the book. There was an incident of abuse, as you were talking on the podcast. Then I thought about other deciphering events that I missed." And, you know, she goes on to discuss, talk about what those were, and give other wonderful insights into the book, characters she was a little mad at, and... I thought you had some great insights. So if you read books in the future, I would love to get response from you, because it'd be great to read some of these actually on the podcast where we discuss the book, because I think some of Sharon's comments would have elicited some good conversation as a part of that particular podcast. She says at the end, "Please keep doing the book club and your podcast, because you pick books I never would. As always, God grows and heals me where he wants." So, and then she said, She liked how I asked, how did you change after reading this book? Which I think is an important question for any book we read, right? Fiction or nonfiction. Great, great question. And I loved, she signed it, keep the conversation going, Sharon. So that's, I appreciated that. Yeah, love that. And then I have to read this podcast, or this email. Before I do, let me remind folks, if you want to send an email and reflect on a particular podcast or give a suggestion or insight, the email address is producer@anitalustria.com. producer@anitalustria.com. So, John, you'll appreciate this. Carol says, Anita, I've enjoyed the movie podcasts with John. I do have one suggestion. Yeah. I do have one suggestion for them, though. Could you announce what movie you will be discussing in advance, like you do the book club podcast, so your listeners can have a chance to watch the movie ahead of time? Yes. Why didn't we not think of that, right? That's a great idea.
Yeah, it was poor planning on our part.
I know. So,
but we won't. That
yeah, we will announce the movie. She said, I find myself all set to listen to your podcast, but then instead not doing so until I can watch the movie being discussed, which I totally get. The podcast is much more meaningful, she feels, after having watched the movie than as a prelude to watching the movie. And I agree. I'm sure that is absolutely true. The movie discussions have challenged me to watch movies that I would not have otherwise tried. Think just as Sharon said about the book, right? She wouldn't have chosen that book. Last night, she talks about her 19-year-old daughter, you know, wanted to watch something together with her mom, and so she suggested our latest movie pick, which was Moana. She'd seen it before. I hadn't. I enjoyed it. I'm still not sure what I think about it from a Christian worldview, even after listening to the podcast discussion. And she goes on to say Disney's come a long way in their princess, quote, princess movies, though, which I appreciate. Thanks for your dedication to Faith Conversations. I enjoy listening each week. So, Carol, thank you. That is so helpful and meaningful. And maybe we should announce our next movie, John.
Yeah, say, did we confirm that that's what we want to do?
Yeah, I think we did. And this is kind of another unusual one. Mike, maybe you'll watch this one with me. I think you will. I know you didn't watch Moana with me, but John, drum roll, yeah, and why don't you announce it?
Yeah, so we're going to be watching The Dark Knight, which is the Batman film directed by Christopher Nolan. Kind of an unusual pick, but there's a lot of good stuff in there. It's one of my favorite films of all time, and it is currently on Netflix.
Yeah, oh, that's good. So an easy one to find and watch. And let me just ask this. I don't know if you've thought about what lens. Often you'll say, let's watch this movie through the lens of, you know,
For
the past ones, we watched one through the lens of determination, through exploration. Right. I can't remember what we watched the way that. So there have been three movie podcasts in the past. You might go back and look at them because you might enjoy those if you happen to have missed them. So if you think of what lens to watch The Dark Knight through, you can let
this,
us know.
this perhaps might be too obvious, but maybe should we do the lens of heroism?
I don't know that it's too obvious. I think here's the deal. You know, you look at the supposed or the hero that you would guess would be the hero. But often there are more heroes than just the, quote, obvious one. So I think that could be a good lens.
Okay, we'll tentatively do that.
Okay, all right.
I think it would be a great lens because I think the world is looking for heroes right now.
Yeah, it could broaden out our discussion.
Look at something through that lens might bring out something really valuable about what people are really looking for in their own lives.
I like that thought. I think that's probably true, actually. So good.
Yeah.
All right. So The Dark Knight it is. I'll let people know that in the show notes here. Well, let's launch into what we are going to discuss today. And John, you had gone actually to a concert. That's an understatement, really.
An all-day music festival.
Yeah, there you go. Not a concert, really.
An all-day music festival. What was it called?
It's called Warped Tour. Warped Tour.
Yeah, I always call it Warp, but it's Warped Tour.
Warped Tour. It's this year was the last year, I believe the 24th or 25th year, and the organizer decided it was time to end for whatever reason, and so this year was the last year, and I think it previously had the distinction of being the longest or the oldest touring music festival in the United States.
Wow.
Or the longest running, or I'm not sure exactly. It had some sort of distinction. Okay. But it's a pretty eclectic range of music. It's alternative metal music, and, you know, punk and everything in between. It's all kind of in that range. And Sarah and I went when it came to the D.C. area a couple weeks ago. And there was a band there that we saw that really has had me thinking this whole week. So the band is called Sharptooth. And they're first of all, if you want to go out and listen to them, they're a very jarring listening experience. I mean, it is in-your-face metal music. And they swear quite a bit, both on stage and in the music. And the whole reason we bring it up, they got me thinking because all of their songs are very intentionally social justice oriented. They only have one album out, and each track is sort of this very aggressive and visceral, in-your-face something that, you know, goes against a particular type of hate. So there's an anti-racist song. There's an anti-homophobia song. Song all about immigration reform policy. I mean, basically they have a song that covers, all of the hot button issues of the day. And I was so struck by it because they, you know, a lot of bands that cover similar topics, they do it in a, they can do it in a more reserved way, but each tune that they have, they almost sort of grab you by the head and they make you look at the horribleness that is in the world, and they do it in a very aggressive fashion musically and lyrically, and it was just it was fascinating. It was a different take on, you know, on social justice, I guess, than I traditionally have been exposed to. And it was just, you know, how forward and, you know, aggressive should you be when it comes to standing up for the right thing was sort of one of the questions that came to mind.
Well, and I just want to add in, you know, you also saw this issue come at in different ways at Warped Tour. Mm-hmm. You saw one band come at it in a very much more gentle way as well. And so that's part of what got you thinking too. I mean, just
right.
Polar opposites on this, so on this topic.
What's the question in the midst of all this? Is it, how should we approach matter justice issues? Is it an aggressive stance or is it a softer stance?
Yeah, I think so. So, like, how much personal responsibility do we as people have to right the wrongs of the world, that, like, when we live in a society that is, you know, noticeably flawed in certain ways? And how do we go about doing that?
Well, that's a great question, and it's kind of,
now can you give us 10 minutes to think? No.
You know, John, yeah, I think it's both, John. I think in some instances there really has to be an aggressive and nonviolent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think there's a difference, you know, aggressive, nonviolent statement of the fact that something is wrong. And I think that there's also a gentler witness that can be done by, by people that draws people attention to the issue in another way. You know, I'm a little bit older. Your mother and I have gone on the justice journey where we kind of retrace the steps of the civil rights movement, went to just about every major civil rights site. And their whole approach to injustice was to approach it from a nonviolent form, to speak up, to march, to be there, but to never to respond to hate with hate, but only respond to hate with love. So.
Well, and let me just add, or maybe ask you, John, this group that you heard that was kind of in your face and aggressive, was it just their style that was, or were they advocating that kind of response in society? Because I think there's that differentiation. Or were they just doing it because this is the audience they're speaking to that likes their style of music?
Right. Well, the style of music is certainly, you know, it wasn't out of the ordinary for the type of bands that were there. But even amongst them, it was very frenetic and extraordinarily high energy. I don't think their lyrics actually advocate violence necessarily, but one of the lyrics in the first track off of their album, I think gets to their approach. So the lyric is, "Because inside me there's a violence that only screaming could ever silence," which I think is exactly how they approach their music. And so it's, you know, it's knowing how to process. So, like, clearly they're torn up about, you know, the terrible things that exist in the world, and that this is a way that they're sort of getting all of that out. But, like, it causes sort of a violent reaction when you're faced with the, you know, these horrible things, like, you know, families being separated, people's lives being, you know, ruined in tangible ways as a result of sexism, racism, homophobia, and all this sort of stuff.
And I think what's interesting is this created a real, real internal response and internal dialogue with yourself. I mean, this is part of what you're raising. And I think, you know, I think it's always interesting, too, to see how another generation, you know, there are a couple generations in between ours and yours, but to see how other generations respond / react, you know, two different things, but to what's happening in the world. And, you know, they're using their medium. I mean, the medium is the message, you know, in a lot of cases, and they're, that's part of what they're doing and trying to reach a specific audience. And I think one of my questions, and I'll turn this to Mike, I think one of my maybe frustrations, I don't know, I've heard a lot, and I'll say my Christian friends who have just felt like, I'm on overload, I can't take anymore, I've turned the news off, I don't listen anymore. And you know, I remember advocating for people to be engaged, to pay attention to what's going on in the news. I think there's a middle ground, isn't there? I don't think it's all or nothing. I get that sometimes you do need to turn it off. I think we need a Sabbath from news, and there are people that kind of OD on listening to the news channels. But I do think we can't turn it all off. We've got to be engaged in the world.
Well, we do, but here's the thing, Anita, and this will probably tick some of your listeners off. The people that can, you know, just walk away from injustice are the privileged.
Okay.
They don't have to face it. They're living lives of everything's just fine for me, and I can make this choice. Mm. I don't have to worry where my next meal is coming from. I don't have to worry if my kids are going to be stopped by, you know, for being black, you know. I don't have to worry about the violence in my neighborhood, because actually everything's pretty peachy keen. So I have this ability then to just turn it off. And that's only the privileged get to do that. So, then you have to ask yourself the question. A lot of your listeners are people of faith. It doesn't jive with faith just to turn it all off. I think it's okay to take a Sabbath from stuff. I think you can monitor your input of stuff. All those are really, really good things. But eventually, you got to face up to the fact that some stuff is happening in our world that's not very good. And then what would God compel me to do in response to that? And just walk away? No, I don't think so.
All right, there's the big question. What would God compel me to do in the midst of this? I mean, so there's some wrestling that has to take place.
Yeah, absolutely. But if you walk away, you can't wrestle. You're just saying, it's too much for me. I can't deal with this. I'll just go whatever the flow is, because the flow is never going to get to them, they think. But they're wrong.
Right. Actually, some of my friends and I were just discussing kind of a similar idea the other day. So, you know, my career is in history, and, you know, a lot of my friends work at historic sites, Civil War-related historic sites. And you get some people that, you know, they come into the park or the museum or wherever, and, you know, they'll want to get in a debate with you, and they're like, oh, the Civil War definitely wasn't about slavery. And, you know, part of the job of the Park Service, and, you know, most people who are in do Civil War, you know, history, is, you know, the Civil War was about slavery. But sometimes, like, the way that comes off to these people, it's like they take it personally. It's like a personal attack. It's like, well, no. Somehow their identity is wrapped up in this, because, and like they want to try and steer the conversation in different ways. I think because it makes them feel uncomfortable, because like Mike said, a lot of time people of privilege, they can, you know, if they start feeling uncomfortable, they can walk away from that pretty easily. And so it gets to admitting that, you know, the United States as a nation is flawed, which is, you know, a place to start. But if you can't even start there, then it's hard to move forward.
Right. You know, John, when we do spiritual direction with people, when they start talking about the things they're resisting doing or saying or whatnot, both your mom and I urge them to, you gotta move in on those resistances.
Gotta pay attention.
What's really underneath that? Is there anything that you're afraid of? Is there something about you that this might reveal that God needs you to pay attention to? And it's one of the hardest things in the whole world. But man, people don't like to do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, they really don't. They'll say, I don't have a racist bone in my body. Well, maybe not a racist bone, just their heart and their mind, you know, their ears and their mouth, you know, all those things. But we don't know how to face that in ourselves, because we all got stuff that's kind of ugly that contributes to the cause.
Well, and I also think we're not good at standing still long enough to actually listen when that voice is speaking. And I'll say, you know, the voice of the Holy Spirit, the voice of God speaking, you know, and so therefore we don't pay attention to, we just walk away. We don't even look at it as, oh, I'm resisting something. We are uncomfortable, so we leave the premises. We don't even get that far in our thinking.
Right. But, and then we forget that, and then, and I'll go back to what I said before, then we forget other people can't leave.
Yes.
They just can't leave.
I think of our friends in Chicago. I mean, Chicago's an easier one for us to talk about because we recently moved from there. But, when people listen to this, it's probably going to be a couple of weeks in the rears or further than that, but recently a huge, horrible weekend of shootings took place in Chicago. When it looked like things were sort of on the decline, things really ramped up. And, you know, right. There are people that cannot walk away from that. When you live in that neighborhood, you can't put your head in the sand.
Well, it's interesting, even talking about that, Anita, you know, we know people that live in a particular neighborhood, East Garfield Park, and they had a shooting in the park right near their house. Well, a lot of people can't even choose where they live. They actually choose to live there. Mm-hmm. They've decided to raise their families in the midst of this really rough neighborhood. There's all kinds of redemptive things going on. But in the park right next to the house, there were just two people shot, you know, a couple weekends ago, and seven people were wounded. But to me, those are the kind of people who are saying, I'm feeling God to call me into something that is not the suburbs. You know, they just move in a whole different direction. God bless them for that. And I don't think we're saying everybody has to do that. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I think God calls us to the edge of our comfortableness, and says, this is only when you get to the place where you're uncomfortable can I do the work I need to do in your life.
Right. I loved so much what, and I'm going to forget her name.
Rashida Graham Washington.
Yes, right? I love so much what you said about, you know, moving to the margins, and how people's margins look different for everybody. Soul Force. She was involved with writing that, or that whole project.
Yeah, she's a co-author along with Sean Castleberry, Rashida Graham Washington, and this was a podcast just a few weeks ago that's really worth listening to. So say that again, John, though, about what Rashida had to say about the margins. I thought this was interesting too.
Right. Well, you know, a big part of the Christian message, and you know, is moving towards the marginalized, or people that, you know, are on the margins of your life. And this, I guess, perhaps should have been obvious, but you know, her big point was everybody's margins look a little bit different depending on the sort of circles you run in regularly. And margins can be, you know, racially oriented. They can be oriented by age, sex. I mean, you name it. So what we're called to do, you know, is step out of our comfort zone and move towards, in whatever ways we can, the people on the margins that we don't hang out with often. And of course, it's not easy. Like, it's inherently difficult and challenging.
It's uncomfortable to step out of our comfort zone. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, like, this is all making me wonder, going back to the band Sharptooth, like, so if discomfort is an inherent part of the whole, you know, advancing, you know, the cause of justice or whatever, then, you know, maybe there is something important about, you know, music and art that intentionally disturbs us.
I think so.
Yeah. In fact, Mike, you posted something recently on Facebook. I reposted it. It moved you. It moved me. And it was music. It was a song.
Well, it was a song, you know, I believe it was South Carolina where the 9 people were killed by Dylan Root.
Yes,
in that
Charleston.
Church. And former President Obama came and concluded his message, which really, if you've never heard it, folks, listen to that message.
It's powerful.
I mean, it was very powerful. And concluded by singing, leading the crowd in the singing of Amazing Grace. Well, Joan Baez, who's one of my favorite people, she's 77 years old, old social justice activist back in the day when things were really real.
in the 60s, by the way, in case you wondered.
Heard a song about that shooting and about Obama coming, and she recorded it, and it's quite lovely. If you go to the Atlantic site and type in Joan Baez song, you'll be able to see the video. Somebody illustrated the song.
Also beautifully.
As I was playing. Yeah. But it was very powerful. It was a different way of being in your face.
Well, and to John's point, you know, the great use of art.
Great use of art. But at the same time, yeah, different than Sharptooth. But at the same time, gets under your skin. Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty of diversity, is there's different ways to get under different people's skin. Mm-hmm. And Sharptooth probably wouldn't be mine, because I've said to John, I can listen to the bands he likes, but I don't understand a single word that's being said.
Or
he has the third.
I can listen for 20 to 30 seconds, or some other ones I can listen longer. But yeah, but I think it's important that these things are addressed in every genre, reaching every person. And mm-hmm. I do think that art is a powerful and important way to reach and make statements. I think it's huge. I think of the music of the civil rights movement, right? Some of the songs are, I mean, We Shall Overcome. And I mean, obviously that's one that immediately leaps out, but there are others. But, you know, art has been used through the centuries, really, to highlight and elevate important conversations that really need to be had, topics that need to have important conversations surrounding them.
Right. And I think, you know, some people, if they listen to Sharptooth, I would say I don't like it. Well, you'd have to ask the question, do you not like what they're saying, or you just don't like the style?
Right, right.
Because those are two different kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
When people are really saying something of substance, it can really get to you, and then you have to think, oh my gosh, does that mean I have to change?
But you know what I want to talk about? I think that the importance is the outworking of this. Because I think it's one thing to talk about it and go, yeah, we should step out of our comfort zone. Yeah, and in mm-hmm. our heads we're going, yeah, maybe someday or what. You know, I think you have to put, eventually, I think you've got to put feet to this. And mm-hmm. and I'm guessing, John, this is some of what you're grappling with. Like, what's your place in this? What, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've,
right.
I don't know if you've come to any conclusions or not. And I'll bring Mike into it, and I don't want to let you off the hook. I'll let you talk about that, John. But, I mean, Mike, I know, posts every Friday. That's a part of his stepping out. And he does step on toes. Not everyone likes what you have to say, but you're speaking up for what you feel is important. You're putting a message out into the world that you deem needs to be said and is valuable.
Yeah, that's the great challenge is knowing exactly what this looks like in a local sort of way. One something that, you know, a very small place to start is even just being aware of, you know, the sorts of things I say, even to just people I know and, you know, situations that have very low stakes, but they're, you know, Sharptooth as another great lyric off of their song No Sanctuary, and so this line says, so if you think your words are harmless, tell that to those who are dead. Every time you say faggot is a bullet through my head.
Mm.
And I mean, obviously that's a particularly harsh word, but but there are kind of less intense words, you know, in that vein that, you know, if said in the wrong situation can really genuinely hurt someone. And so trying to be, you know, on a small scale, trying to be aware of sort of language to use when talking about these sorts of things.
And I'll even say in any situation, it's hurtful when it goes past our ears. And, you know, to speak up specifically in those low stakes scenarios, which actually can feel really high stakes. There's something about friends and family that sometimes feels difficult to speak up and against if we disagree with something. I certainly have felt that. Mike?
Well, I think one of our jobs as people, generally people of faith particularly, is to be a virus. You know, so if I'm talking to some people or having coffee and somebody says, well, if those families didn't want to be separated at the border, they should have never come here in the first place. They're getting what they deserve. And sometimes we just got to learn to say gently and ask God not to get us to a point where we're responding in bad ways. Just say, I just want you to know I disagree a whole lot with what you're saying. And then just stop mm-hmm. and just see where it goes from there. Because I think a lot of people don't even think about anything different what they believe because they don't hear anybody disagreeing with them.
Mm-hmm.
Partly because they only hang out with people that they agree with. So they go to churches where they have God and Country Sunday and, you know, all this kind of stuff where everybody's walking in lockstep with one another. All it takes is one person to say, why are we doing this? Why are we supporting families being separated? What's keeping us from having a more generous immigration policy? You know, just asking simple questions that don't necessarily have easy answers, but unless we're willing to even be that small virus in the air, then people just go around in circles with other people going around in circles, and they just reinforce their bad beliefs.
And I think when someone makes a statement and we don't speak up, they assume we must agree with them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they do. But and I think that there's ways. I've watched John a few times on his. And I only went on one of your tours, John. No, two of your tours. But you raised good questions with people about why certain things were happening at different times at Civil War sites and whatnot, that gets them thinking about the greater reality and gets them, you know, looking beyond just their own stereotypes of things. Mm-hmm. You know, and you, I've heard you respond to people and ask a good question back to them and say, well, and that's a way of doing it too.
Yeah, I think that's really true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like knowing how to leave a space open for conversation and knowing how to not shut something down before it even starts. That's something I've been thinking about recently too, because there are certain things you can say or do, you know, in any situation that if you lead off with that, then there's just definitely not going to be a conversation about anything substantive. And so knowing how to, you know, set up the space in such a way that if it comes up, there is space for a, you know, a challenging conversation that needs to be had.
Right.
What are you struggling and thinking, you know, what is your space in the world? What can I do? I think some of what you're thinking is how can I speak up in those important moments? I don't know how far you've gone with your thinking or.
Not very far. But I don't know. It's something that's been on my mind really since I saw them. So yeah, I mean, been thinking about ways I can sort of, you know, hold myself on like a daily basis, just, you know, with people that I interact with. But, you know, as far as larger opportunities, places to get involved, you know, still working on that, I suppose.
Have I shared on the podcast, John, you might know this, about my experience in downtown Sarasota recently with some homeless?
I don't think so.
I think I've shared it like just with individuals. But so this is still running around in my mind, and I think it might add to the conversation here. Mm-hmm. I drove downtown. I had some books with me. I was going to go sit in a cafe, have some tea, and read. And I go to pull into a parking space, and there's a guy in the space next to me with his hood up. And I went halfway into the space, and I wanted to back out and keep going because I thought, oh, I'm not going to immediately get to my little cafe. I'm going to need to help this guy because his hood is up. He probably needs a jump start. And I thought, you know how your mind's going a mile a minute. And I thought, okay, God, yes, he's here. Yes, pull on in. So I pulled in. And, you know, a young man didn't know how to jump start his car, but had jumper cables. And there were two or three men that were helping him to figure out how to do this. And one of the guys said to me, hey, can you back out? I'll stand behind you, help you back out and pull your car so the nose of your car is a little closer to his. It'll be easier to get the jumper cables hooked on. So I did all that. And then these guys helped him. And in the midst of all of this happening, I realized that all of these guys helping with the jumper cables were all homeless. That they jumped to the aid of this 30-something, I'll call him a kid, 20 or 30-something kid in a car who really didn't know how to jump a car, didn't know what was wrong with his car. These guys had lived a lot of life, and it's obvious they had jump-started a car before. And they were so, no, the young man was appreciative. He's like, thank you, ma'am. But all of these homeless guys were so appreciative. Thank you for helping. In that moment, there was something that happened. I saw how that particular moment in time gave them purpose, gave them some worth and dignity to help someone. And it,
right,
it just did something to me. And I thought, I had this inner sense, I need to volunteer somewhere. I need to do something. Yeah. And Mike and I have had a conversation about this, and I've actually been emailing some places and have not actually only heard back from one place, but it's, so I need to make some phone calls and go visit some places. But I really do feel like my next step personally is to do some kind of volunteering to help some people in the margins. Mm-hmm. It may not be with homeless. I don't know. I'm looking at several organizations, and I don't know where I'm going to land, but it's something I'm looking into. And I think it's the first time I've really taken a maybe a bigger step like this to volunteer, but partly because I've had a huge life in Chicago. I didn't have personal time margin to be able to do it, or I helped in different kinds of ways. But yeah, so I don't know if either of you have any reaction to that, but that's sort of what's coming out. And I think some of that's a response to what's going on in our broader culture that I'm so deeply saddened about. Like, I want to make some kind of a difference. Where can I make a difference? It's going to look different for every person. But I think we need to ask that question. Where can we make a difference? And I think it's also important to start small, but to start.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, it was for you, it was an encounter along your margins, which, you know, is inherently challenging and thought-provoking. And, you know, you survived. You know, it's, you know, not, you know, in a vacuum, perhaps the way that your dream way to spend a block of time, but it was clearly a meaningful situation for you and other people involved.
Well, and honestly, and it's just, honestly, it was all of 15 minutes. Nothing really that I lost, but what I've gained, I have thought about this. I've talked about this multiple times with multiple people, and I'm like, okay, God, wow, you wanted to make me think, you wanted to get my attention, and yeah, and you did.
Well, yes, and Anita, I think too, all those situations just kind of go into your head, and the next time you're with a group of people and they're saying something about homeless, you know, based on ignorance, because that's sometimes what happens, you could say, well, let me tell you a story,
right.
You know? And I think there's nothing more valuable than stories. It's hard for people to refute that, although they will try. And so you got the story of you helping some homeless men help this other guy,
right?
And all of a sudden you're adding value to the conversation in a different kind of way,
right?
Because the biggest mistake we have in life is we end up talking to people about, like, race. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about race conversations, but everybody that's talking about it is a white male. Mm. Well, yeah. maybe there's something missing in the midst of that.
Yeah, that's good. I would love to hear from people who are feeling nudged to do something, wondering about stepping out. Maybe this conversation has gotten you thinking. Maybe you're struggling with this same issue that, you know, John raised because he went to a all-day festival and heard some in-your-face music. What are you thinking? How is God nudging you, and how are you responding or not? Would love to hear from you. producer@anitalustria.com. That's the email address, producer@anitalustria.com. Any other words, closing words from either of you? I don't want to cut you short.
No, I think that's about it.
Okay.
Well, it's certainly not it.
Yes. But it's it for this conversation, right?
Yeah. Great conversation. I'm gonna go online and get that Sharp Tooth album right now.
That's right.
just go at it. And John's going to go out and get Joan Baez.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah.
And then we'll talk about it.
That's great. I love it. Hey, John, thanks for as this kind of sparked you to think, thanks for raising this topic for a podcast. I think it's really valuable. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Absolutely.
And I really mean this today, folks. Keep the conversation going.